Well, good morning again. So I was away last week. Some of you may have noticed that. You're all like, where did Devin go? Where's Devin? Well, I was away. So I missed Doug Sider's amazing message last week. But I did listen to it on the blog, and I have to say one thing about Doug's message. Thanks. I don't see him, so I'll say, I listened to the blog, and it's just a lesson that you should always listen to the messages that you miss on the blog, because you never know what might be on there. You just might find yourself complimented in front of hundreds of people unexpectedly. It's all good. And so, Doug, if you're listening to this, I think you look great. I don't care what anyone else says. So I remember when I was in high school, I was a pretty serious rugby player. I don't know if any of you know the game rugby. It's a pretty severe sport, but I loved it, and that's why. You know, I went to 4 years in the game and 3 years playing as a senior. Figure that one out. And I went to OFSA for those 3 years playing as a senior. And in those 3 years, we finished fourth every time. That felt good the third time through. But I remember we used to go to all these tournaments. We went to this one tournament in Kingston. And, you know, senior and junior teams, lots of people went. It was a lot of fun. We were being housed in these residences in Kingston. Maybe I should say contained. These residences in Kingston. When we were leaving in the trip, the coach got up at the front of the bus, and he held up this hat. And he said, here's the deal. Whenever you don't do something stupid, you get to wear the hat and pay a fine. You have to understand, the hat wasn't just a hat. It was a bright pink cowgirl hat with like ribbons and bells attached all over it. And he said, you have to wear it no matter where you go or what you're doing, unless you're actually playing a game. And then once someone else does something stupid, then they pay the fine and they get the hat. So this one day, me and a few guys are walking around in Kingston doing what teenage guys do, looking for a place to eat. And we go by this one restaurant, and all the guys are like, yeah, we should eat here. And so I'm walking by, and I'm doing one of these, you know, looking in the restaurant, walking by. Bam! You know that when you walk into something, and you have no idea what it was, but you know it was all your fault, there's that moment of, So I look over to see what it was that I had actually ran into, and I realize that it's a man. It's a fairly large man. And so I start to apologize, because I know it's my fault, right? You know it's when your fault. And so I start to apologize, and as I'm doing it, a few details start to register. And follow me on this. Ready? Thick, dark glasses. Straight, vacant expression, white cane, red tip. Yeah, I had just ran into and almost knocked over an elderly blind man. Guess who got the hat next? And you know, there's never been a moment in my life where I doubted the fact that I earned the hat. Because, you know, there's certain people in our society, certain vulnerable kinds of people that you just don't mistreat, right? You don't treat them a certain way, like the blind. We know that. Here's the question I want to ask us this morning. If we were to look at our lives in depth in each other, in the way that we treat the most vulnerable people of our society, would any of you deserve the hat? That's where I want to start this morning. Would any of you deserve the hat, the way you've treated the most vulnerable in our society, maybe with what you've done or what you haven't done? You know, in Living Red, we're working our way through this passage from Luke 4. Luke 4, 18 and 19, that says, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Of course, this morning we're focusing on that passage, or that one line in this passage that says, and recovery of sight to the blind. Now, I don't think we really get how drastic this line, this passage is really supposed to be. Here, let me give you an example. We're coming up on a federal election in Canada right now. Did you know that? Yeah, who would have thought? So we got our Conservatives facing the Liberals, the Green Party being left out, and the Bloc just kind of sitting back waiting for everyone to screw up so they can collect all the French votes. You know, same old. Can you imagine a politician getting behind their podium and declaring something like what Jesus said here? You know, just imagine, so, politician, as your prime minister, I will proclaim good news to the poor. Okay, I don't know what that means, but okay. Freedom to the prisoners. Not sure if that's a good idea, but whatever. Sight to the blind. What? What is that? That's pretty huge, isn't it? We can't even imagine someone today claiming it. Can you imagine someone back then claiming it? And you know what? We don't even understand the full extent of the issue of blindness 2,000 years ago. I want you to think about this. How many of you are wearing glasses or contacts? How many of you have had a treatment for glaucoma or any sort of eye repair? How many of you have had cataract surgery? I know one. How many of you have had a simple eye infection, right? And back then, there was no polysporin eye drops. Think about how huge the impact of loss of sight is on a society without all the things that we have today. You know, to make it worse, unsanitary conditions and lack of any medical supplies just compounds the problem. And they weren't wearing their fancy UV sunglasses like they were supposed to. This only makes it worse. Blindness was a huge issue in Jesus' day. It was a huge issue. In fact, in the ancient world, the condition of blindness was seen as being only slightly less serious than being dead. Isn't that interesting? Kind of a morbid fashion. It's not hard to see why. If you can't see, you can't work. And if you can't work, you don't eat. The only blind people who were able to survive in this society were the people who had the family who could at least house them in the night, bring them to the curb, and help them to beg for money. That was the only way they were able to make it. That was the only way they were able to survive. You know, the seriousness of this blindness in that culture, it makes me wonder, when Jesus was referring to blindness, was he just picking the most prominent physical issue of his day? You know, maybe if he was alive today and he was saying this again, he would say something different. Maybe he wouldn't say blindness, he would say, I have come to heal the AIDS epidemic. You know, this idea of blindness really brings us to the fact that Jesus really, really cared about the physical maladies and conditions that people had in his time. In fact, you could say that that was the primary focus of his ministry. You know, when he healed people, he was often healing the source of their poverty. And he often healed people before he ever brought up any sort of spirituality with them. Can you see that? Can you see how the church sometimes reverses this idea? We sometimes become so obsessed with what we see as their spiritual issues that we ignore the physical problems that they have. And you know what? When people are hungry or thirsty or dying of HIV/AIDS, they just don't care what Jesus can do for them. They just don't. And this is why Jesus was so popular. They flew to him. They ran to him in crowds because he cared about people and their conditions. So while I was preparing for this message, I came across this story that I've read several times in John 9. I would really encourage you this afternoon, after the service, sometime this week, to read through John 9. You know, I've read it several times before, but it popped out at me a little different this time. Instead of just a story about a blind man being healed and the aftermath, I saw a story about all sorts of people who had to struggle through their misconceptions around people who have conditions. And so what I want to do is I want to look through some of these misconceptions and how they can teach us and go through some practical ways that we can make a difference. So the first thing that we need to remember to do, in order to make a difference, we must believe that it's not their fault. You see where I'm getting at there? In order to help people who are diseased, thirsty, have some sort of physical problem, we need to believe that their suffering is not their fault. You know, the story starts out in John 9, 1 to 3. It says, "As he went along, he saw a blind man from birth." He in this is Jesus. "As he went along, he saw a blind man from birth. His disciples asked him, 'Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?' 'Neither this man nor his parents sinned,' said Jesus, 'but this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him.'" Now, I don't know about you, but I'm always amazed at how easily people forget things. Now, follow me on this. We're coming up on spring, right? And a few months after that, it'll be summer. I promise. And a few months after that, you're going to wake up one morning, you're going to look out the window, and the roads are going to be covered with this magical stuff called snow. And then you're going to think to yourself, because you're a reasonable person, well, I'm going to have to shovel, and I'm going to have to shower quick so that I can have plenty of time to get to work this morning, because the roads are going to be slippery. But some people forget that, don't they? And so you know in the back of your head, you just know it, that on your way to work, you're going to see two or three cars in the ditch during that first snowfall. And don't lie to me, you're going to be thinking the same thing that I think. Man, that sucks. But they probably deserve it. They were probably driving too fast. They were probably swerving in traffic too much. You know, this mentality that those people who suffer deserve it was primary to the cultural thinking in Jesus' day. You know, it comes out in what the disciples say. The disciples ask this question: who sinned, this man or his parents? There's just ultimate assumption. There's no other way to think about it than other than this man is blind, therefore God must be angry with someone. You know, one of the major differences between the way our culture looks at people and the way this culture looked at people comes with the rich. You know, the rich in our culture is someone that you can hate and you can dislike because they're rich. In that culture, the rich were people to be revered, because if you're wealthy, if you're blessed, then God must really like you. Then you must have done something that God really likes. This is the way the mentality went. And on the flip side of that coin, if you're suffering, if you're diseased, if you're blind, then you must have done something to get God angry. But Jesus turns this upside down, as he does with so many things. He says, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him." He's saying it's not his fault that he's blind, but him being blind is a chance for us to glorify God by helping him out. It's not his fault. It's just an opportunity for us to help him out. You see how he flips everything around? Can you think of any situations in our lives where we look at people and we think, oh, it's just their own fault? Like the homeless? Maybe people who suffer from alcoholism or obesity? It's just their fault. You know, whether it's true or not, maybe beside the point. Because as long as you believe that it's their fault and they can just solve it themselves, you will never, ever be able to help them. And that's what Jesus understood. He said, we must help him to glorify God. You know, one of the biggest issues where people assume fault is around the HIV/AIDS epidemic. You know, I've heard people say if they just used sexual protection, they'd be fine. If they just kept their activities to within marriage, they'd be fine. If they just accepted the education and help, they'd be fine. And what those all come down to is just stupid excuses for us to do nothing. Puts the blame on them, which takes the responsibility away from us. You may be thinking, well, what am I supposed to do about that, right? I can't be Jesus, walk around and touch people and heal them. Maybe not. You're thinking, I'm not a doctor. I can't just go over and start medicating people. Probably not. Now, I want to tell you something. You know, in 2008, there was 430,000 new cases of HIV/AIDS in children alone, and 280,000 died. In 2009, it was reported that the new cases of HIV/AIDS had decreased by 15% in some areas and as much as 25% in East areas in Africa. This is a problem that can be fought. It's something that can be worked on and worked against. There's all sorts of great organizations like World Vision, that Todd talked about earlier, that work hard trying to solve this issue. My wife and I sponsor some children through World Vision, and the great thing about that organization is when you sponsor a child, I don't want to sound like a commercial, but when you sponsor a child, you're not just helping that one child. All the money goes to helping that community through education and infrastructure and medication and food and water and things that they need. I want to encourage you to look up this. How can you make a difference in that crisis? With that being said, I need to move on to my next point. Just the fact that in order to make a difference, we must believe that it's our responsibility to help. It's not our option. It's not our privilege. But if you call yourself a follower of Christ, it is your responsibility to do something. I talked earlier about how the focus of Christ's ministry was in solving these problems, these physical maladies that people have. If you're not working to try to help to solve these in any way, how can you really say that you're living out the life that Jesus lived? That doesn't fit. You know, there is this one time I was in a group, and there's a friend of mine who was coming. And she was late, and we were getting a little worried. And when she got there, finally, she was a little shaken. So we were like, well, what's going on? What happened? She said, well, I'm fine. I saw a car accident on the way here. The way she described it is like, you know, car passing several cars uphill and dark, and then someone's coming up over the hill. So they had to veer over. And friend said, it's just like cars everywhere, chaos. Just all over. And she was fine. She didn't get hit, but she pulled over and she jumped out of the car and waved someone down and said, I need to use your cell phone. We need to call 911. And this is what they said. This will never leave my mind. They said, oh, no. Sorry, we can't help. We're on our way to church. One of my biggest peeves is when people use religion to get out of living out their faith. I don't want you to get me wrong on this, but it's what I mean. People use religion, their religious activities, or whatever you may be, to get out of living out their faith. You know, I think of these people who do stuff like protest homosexual marriage. And I see them on the news, right, holding their signs out on the side of the road. And I can't help but think, really? That's what you want to do for the glory of the kingdom of God. That's it. That's going to be your thing. That's what you want to be responsible to Jesus for. You know, in the time that you could do that, You could stand out in front of a store and collect money for World Vision. And you're thinking, well, you know, I wouldn't actually get very much money doing that. Maybe. But you'd do a lot more good for the kingdom of God than with the protest, wouldn't you? You know, I think about, you may be with me on this, you get a lot of emails around Christmas from Christian people who, you know, the save Jesus' birthday kind of thing? I'm not really mad about this, but I get this kind of thing, and I can't help but wonder, if you really hate the commercialization of Christmas and the secularization of Christmas that much, maybe this year, instead of complaining about it, don't buy your kids presents this year and use that money to buy stuff out of the MCC gift-giving guide, where you can buy education as a gift, you can give medication as a gift, you can give water or food and supplies as a gift to people. Don't let your religion get in the way of living out your faith. You know, in Jesus' time, there was people who were the absolute masters at this. And in the story where this man is healed from blindness, all of his neighbors and everyone in his direct community realize that this is a guy who was born blind, and now he can see, and they're all like, wow, this is amazing. So they take this blind man to what are called the Pharisees, the religious scholars of their day. These are like the masters of theology at that point. This is what it says. They brought to the Pharisees the man who had been blind. Now the day on which Jesus had made the mud and opened the man's eyes was a Sabbath. Therefore the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. He put mud on my eyes, the man replied, and I washed and now I see. Some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath. But others asked, how can a sinner perform such signs? So they were divided. Now, this can be a little confusion with the pronouns, but I'm going to explain it. These Pharisees are the people who have dedicated their lives to looking at what we would call the Old Testament of the Bible and studying God. Just dedicated every moment to following these laws and rules, waiting for the Messiah to come. And they're presented with this man who has been born blind and healed of blindness. Now, the thing that makes this different is the fact that you can heal people who are blind, but they didn't think that even a miracle would heal someone who had been born blind. They didn't know that was possible, even for God. So they were just like, this would be huge to them. And here's the problem they have. They say, this man, whoever healed the blind man, because they don't know it was Jesus at this point, this man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath. Their minds should be exploding, and here's the problem they have, that he was healed on a Saturday instead of a Tuesday. And they say, I'll give some explanation to this. No Jewish man was allowed to do any work on the Sabbath day, which is a Saturday in our week. And they considered miraculous healing work. So this guy who healed this man, whoever he may be, because they don't know it was Jesus, must be evil because he has the gall to rid someone of their lifelong suffering on a Saturday. And what are they basically saying in this passage? They're basically saying, well, if I could do miraculous healing, I would have done something more appropriate and waited till the next day, and then I would have healed them. But here's the question I have to ask. Do you really think that the kind of people who would not heal them on a Saturday would actually heal them on a Tuesday? I don't think so. Because the truth is that these guys may not have had the miraculous capability that Jesus had, but they still had the ability to help. And they didn't. Because their religion was boggling up, taking all their time, and they couldn't live out their faith. You know, I think very simply, and if you read the story this week, you'll know where I got this from. I think there's one simple thing that these guys had access to and could have done, which is still a serious issue in our day, may surprise you. Water. Do you know that water is the greatest cause of disease, parasites, sometimes growths and tumors in the third world? Water. Because it's not clean. Unsanitary water may be the leading cause of death in many areas of the world. And we don't get this. We don't understand it. Because in our culture, water is a commodity. Did you know that water in a plastic bottle is 15,000 times more expensive than the water out of a tap? Would you pay 15,000 times more for a Coke? No. Think about it this way. How much does it cost for a 1 liter bottle of water? Like $5? How much? Say $5. Would you pay $5 a liter to fill up your car with gas? No. There would be riots in the streets. That's ridiculous, right? That's what happens when water becomes a commodity. In most of the world, water is not a commodity. It's a luxury, at best, if they've ever even seen it. You know, there's all sorts of organizations who are trying to make a serious difference in the water crisis around the world. Whether it's drilling wells or shipping in purification systems or building cisterns, they're making a difference. And things are improving. I want to highlight one organization for you that's one of my favorite right now. You can write this down in that huge blank spot in your notes. Mimi made a joke to me about how as soon as we have more space for sermon notes, I gave her the shortest notes in a very long time. Write down mycharitywater.org. Mycharitywater.org. There's some things I love about this little organization. First of all, 100% of our donations actually goes to drilling wells. They have separate fundraising for the actual administration of this. Second of all, if you go on the website, you can actually, through GPS, track the specific wells that you're helping to drill, like pinpoint it on a Google map, which I think is really cool. But here's the one thing that makes it great, because they've come up with this idea that makes it easy for anyone to do this. It's called give away your birthday for water. Give away your birthday. I think Justin Bieber's doing it right now, actually. Every time I go on the site, I see a big picture of Justin Bieber. I hope it's from the site. Anyway. The whole idea is you tell all your friends and all your family, you say, look, don't take me out, don't buy me presents, don't send me cards. Instead, give me a donation because I'm giving my birthday away to drill a well. I think it's a great idea. That's something any of us can do, isn't it? Giving away your birthday for water. It can make such a huge difference. Clean water changes whole communities. It makes them more lively. It makes them healthier in like a physical and a spiritual way. So I'm running short on time, so I'm just gonna move on to my last point. If we want to make a difference to the physical maladies of this world, we must believe that God's power is real. Oh, he's on the spiritual point now. We must believe that God's power is real. You know, I think that we have a very narrow view of what God's power is. You know, when we hear about someone who's been miraculously healed, we say, wow, God showed up. But I want to ask you this morning, what's the difference, really, between God miraculously healing someone or God changing the heart in an individual so that they live their life differently, making a difference in other people's situations? What's the difference? I think the greatest power of God that he moves among his people is by changing us in order to move in our world and making a difference. Have you ever thought about that? You know, this idea is exemplified near the end of this story. The Pharisees are just like, you know, they're kicking buckets over this whole thing. So they go up and they talk to this man again, and they question him about who it was who healed him. There's a really interesting part of this story is the fact that the man who's cured of blindness never actually saw Jesus. So he has no idea who did it. No idea. So the Pharisees come up to him and ask him about him. And he says, the man answered, now that is remarkable. You don't know where he comes from. They're wondering if he's from God or not. Yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners. He listens to the godly person who does his will. Nobody has ever heard of opening the man eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. I want to ask you, do you really believe that? Do you believe that without God, you can do nothing? Believe that with God, you can make such a huge difference. And when I give money to a homeless man, or I'm donating money to World Vision, or when I go out to work with people who need my help, I can pray for those people and believe that God is with me and let God work through me and make a huge, huge difference in my life with him transforming me and their lives transforming them. I think about this blind man. This is a guy who's never seen in his life. That means he's never read, he's never been educated. All he's ever done is sit on the curb and beg for money. And at this point, he's lecturing the most educated theological scholars of his day. That's some transformation. God can make a huge difference in people's lives. And that's the challenge today, is when you go out, be a different kind of help. When you go out to whatever it is you're doing, and you think, we can make a difference, we can make a difference, because we've got God's power. Now I'm going to ask the worship team to come up. We're going to do a closing song. Before they start, and before I pray for the end of the service, I just want to say, if you have any questions or any ideas or anything you want to talk to me, just find me at the end of the service. I'll be up here somewhere. And I'm always glad to do that. But right now, let's pray. Dear Lord, I thank you so much for this chance that we have, this time to be together, this time to hopefully be challenged about how to make a difference in the world. Lord, I want to ask that you move in us to really give us a heart for the people who are suffering around us, the people who are suffering in places far away and in places close to us. I hope that we can learn to see you in these people and know that because of your love for them, we just need to help them. I just pray that you be with us this morning, this afternoon, and the rest of this week as we go on. Help us to make a difference in the way we live and the way we live our lives. Amen.
We're going to close our service today by singing together the song we opened with this morning, our commitment for God to send us out and use us. Will you stand with us? Let's sing this together. this morning to worship together. I encourage you to come tonight. 7 o'clock is our worship night, and have a great day.